Beckham. There's Beckham. There's the ball. There's Beckham. There's Beckham. There's Beckham. The ball's dangerous. Oh, hell. Can you believe it? He's done it again. Another golden moment.
Hello and welcome. Good morning. Buenos dias. And dobro jutro, wherever you're listening to around the world, probably more likely around the country. Two amazing games this morning as we finally, after a little two-day hiatus, get back into World Cup action. But before we get into that, let's introduce our panelists. And finally back on our shores, Tom Williams, after his little Qatar adventure, is back with us. How are you, Tom?
Very well. It's great to be back home. It's not great to be watching these games at ridiculous times, though. It felt very annoying having to get up at 5:30 this morning to get up for that Argentina game. But look, the game's the game. Just going to have to cop it, I guess.
Makes it easier when we get a game as good as that as well. And also joining us, of course, is Pat Brichetto. Pat, great to have the band back together.
Yes, very good. Very glad to be here. And yeah, can't wait to analysing two crazy games. Just absolutely just storylines and drama galore, wasn't it?
You mentioned storylines. And the biggest story of the day, of course, is Brazil, everyone's favourites. I know personally, I thought they were locked onto in it. Absolutely stunned by Croatia. Croatia had one shot on target in this game to 11. Livakovic, the absolute hero for Croatia. What a story this is, Pat.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible. I think we were talking about just before how it feels like Croatia haven't even really had a good game, like a good full 90-minute game, except maybe that one against a pretty poor Canada side the whole tournament, and yet here they are in the semi-finals and just having knocked off the team that everyone thought would go all the way. It's kind of incredible. Just the resilience, just the sheer unwillingness to back down, to lie down, to give up. It is kind of inspiring in a way. It's an amazing story, you know, a country of 4 million people, and, you know, they're still being carried by Luka Modric, who's, you know, 37, 38 years old, and yet here they are just whenever everyone, you know, puts them down, whenever everyone says, you know, oh, they can't do it again, no, this is it. You know, I was one of them. I think I backed them to lose to bloody Japan before they versed Japan, and then I thought they would have been tonked about 3-4-0 in this one, and yet, you know, they went behind, you know, they held them off, largely thanks to, as you mentioned, their keeper, Livakovic. I think he made 10 saves, I believe. I don't know if that includes the save in the shootout as well. But, you know, they went behind in extra time. You kind of think, oh, shit, is this finally the moment where that Croatian resolve gives up? Yet they don't give up. They catch Brazil on the counter somehow. I don't know why Brazil had so many players forward when they're holding a 1-0 lead with just 2 minutes to go. But they have that resilience. They had that one chance, however lucky it may be. But that's the sign of a football team that can go so far in these major tournaments. They just need that one chance to do it. And then the shootout, once again, they hold their nerve and they do it. And I think, you know, we could be seeing statues to Dominic Livakovic. The design's already starting to be made in Zagreb, in Split, in Dubrovnik, in all the big Croatian cities, because seriously, they owe a massive debt of gratitude to that keeper. Just what a performance, especially that second half, where Brazil really started to pepper that goal. I mean, he just stood firm, you know, he knew what he needed to do. He made himself big. He used any part of his body that he could, and he held out. Brazil side that, look, they played really well. And I think I want to mention this now because I know it's obviously been lost just in all the drama of Brazil being knocked out. But what a goal by Neymar. That was just genuinely absolutely incredible. He starts that move. It's a brilliant pass. And how he's got the ability, I don't even know what it is. It's just a sign of a true world-class generational talent. But he's able to, I think he's, one of the defenders tries to take him off his feet. He somehow stays on his feet. He's got the composure to get past Livakovic and then smash into the roof of the net without skying it over. It was just absolutely brilliant. And the scenes after the goal were fantastic. You know, the whole team celebrating together. But unfortunately for Brazil, it wasn't the winning moment. And I would have loved to have been in that dressing room after the game. I think they would have just been stunned that they somehow contrived to be knocked out in the quarterfinals once again.
Tom.
Yeah. It's really cool because one of the best things about the World Cup is just like having these guys that you've never heard of, like Livakovic, just randomly step up and become heroes. Like, I'm sure, like, obviously we know a lot about Duke and stuff like that, but there would have also been, like, a lot of Australians that didn't know anything about Mitch Duke or Craig Goodwin. and they just like pull up at a World Cup and just go absolute sicko mode. So it's, and even like for other countries as well, you see it with Mexico, Chavez, I think plays in the Mexican league. He almost like single-handedly got Mexico over the line against Saudi Arabia to qualify for the round of 16. Like there's been so many stories of just these random individuals throughout this World Cup just pulling out unbelievable things. And I think obviously Livakovic will get the plaudits for that save from Rodrigo. I didn't think it was a very good pen by Rodrigo, but the saves that Livakovic made in regular time were like phenomenal. I think that was that one from Paqueta where the ball's sort of like bouncing up and then he just gets his body in the way. That was like unbelievable. There was one from Neymar at the near post, which was really good. And I think if you're a team like Croatia, you've sort of, and you're obviously sort of technically inferior to Brazil, then you've got to have a goalkeeper that has a pretty much a masterclass to get over the line in games like that. So I don't think it should be underestimated how good he is. And yeah, credit to them. They did an unbelievable job to get to two World Cup semifinals in a row for any country is pretty unbelievable. But when you're a country as small as Croatia in terms of their population size, then yeah, it's just pretty much next level, I guess.
And yeah, just to add to the point that Tom made about unknown players, even we've been used to seeing in Croatia they've had this kind of golden run over the past 4 or 5 years, but we're used to seeing players like Kramaric and Ivan Perisic scoring those goals. But even this Bruno Petkovic, I think he came off the bench. I don't know how much of the World Cup he's played so far, but again, just this bloke that
he's so bad
European. Exactly. But unless you're like a Croatian football fan or like a fan of his club, you probably haven't really heard of him or seen him play. But then here's this guy, and look, it takes a deflection. It's a jammy goal. It kind of, I guess, sums up Croatia in this game. But bugger it, he comes up, he has his big moment. I think it's the point that Tom makes is that World Cups, it's just brilliant in bringing these players that we haven't really thought of, haven't really heard of. It gives them their moment in the spotlight. I think it's just great to see.
100%. Tom, it's hold on. Just to add to the point about Petkovic, because it's actually interesting. But Petkovic was getting benched by Dani Juric at Zagreb. So the fact that Petkovic has just like come in and scored this unbelievable goal is pretty insane. And there was this like whole argument in the Croatian national setup whether they should start Livaja or whether they should start Petkovic. And I think Livaja has been starting most of the games, but it's split their fan base because I think Livaja plays for Hajduk and I think Petkovic plays for Zagreb. So there was a massive like thing going on there about bias and whatever.
Just wanted to touch on what Pat said a little bit earlier about resilience, going to that a little bit further. Croatia, of course, 2 penalty shootout wins in a row, but in their 2018 run, they beat Denmark on penalties in the round of 16, beat Russia on penalties in the quarterfinals, beat England after extra time in the semis. Now they've done it two times in a row. They've also, in every game that hasn't been a goalless draw, because of course they had 2 goalless draws in the group stage, have conceded the first goal, I think, in just about every game since the start of the 2018 World Cup. It's a remarkable run. And do you think that, Tom, do you think that ability to sort of come from behind and even when, like we said, everyone's sort of counting them out, do you think that will hold them in good stead to maybe pull off something incredible and beat another team to win their first World Cup?
Yeah, I think it's something innate about the Croatian mentality. They're obviously very robust, very battle-hardened, and I think that sort of helps them in times like this. But I think you've also got to look at, particularly at this World Cup, and even at the last World Cup, to be honest. We saw at the last World Cup, their rear guard actually stood up very well. People sort of take the piss out of it. But Dejan Lovren at the last World Cup was like actually really good. And same with Domagoj Vida as well. And we're seeing that again at this World Cup with Gvardiol, who's been, apart from Harry Suter, of course, probably the best centre-back at this World Cup. and Lovren's been a pretty good partner for him. But I think the thing with Croatia that allows them to be so resilient and allows them to be to stay in games even when they're down is the fact that they've got these 3 really, really, really good midfielders with Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric, because it means that they can actually control games. So, for example, I think they had around 50% of the ball against Brazil. In other games, like, you'd expect Brazil to sort of... Yeah, you'd expect Brazil to sort of just like run over the top, especially after they score that goal in extra time. But I think with Croatia's midfield, they're actually able to maintain possession of the ball and sort of calm the game down when there's certain like parts of the game where the other team might be dominating and stuff like that. I think that really, really helps them to be able to get through stretches of games, even when the opposition is sort of on top of them. And we saw that against Japan. Like, there was parts of the game where Japan were absolutely peppering them, but Croatia managed to get through and take it to pens and win.
And of course, that wasn't the only game of the day. As unbelievable of an upset that was, the 6 a.m. game here in Australia. It was Netherlands-Argentina. Argentina looked like they were coasting, and then Netherlands come out of nowhere. Pat, what did you make of this one? It was almost... during the game, we were messaging each other, and at one point you're like, eh, this game is sort of fizzling out when it was 2-0. Then all hell broke loose, and it ended up being probably one of the games of the World Cup so far.
I think it's obviously not, it's not really quality-wise in terms of the products on the pitch, but I do agree just in terms of the drama. And I think chaos is the best way to describe this game. And I think it didn't help that the referee, I don't know his first name, but Lajos, the Spanish referee, I think he's a bit infamous in Spain for being a bit of a ref that just is interesting, we'll put it that way. And just this game, it was just, I don't know, I think he must have blown his whistle about 400 times. I think I got bloody sick of it by the end. But yeah, just... I mean, really in spirit from the Dutch to stay in it, you know. I mean, they kind of did have to change the whole way they set up. They did the, you know, hashtag get it launched. They got Luc de Jong and they got Wout Weghorst on, but credit to them, it bloody worked. And just that free kick, I honestly thought, I was thinking to myself when I was watching it, this is going to be one of those free kicks that just goes straight into the wall, blasted in, then the game's done. And then they pull off that free kick routine that I think no one was expecting. It was just absolutely crazy. And then just before then, I think there was the moment where Paredes took out Nathan Ake and went to the Dutch bench. That was bloody hilarious. I absolutely loved that. But just, I don't know. It was just weird seeing the Dutch even get to extra time than penalties, because I thought they were absolutely awful for the first 82 and a half minutes of that game. They were terrible. I don't think they've been great this tournament. Like, even in their games before, I think they've obviously had, they probably had the softest group of all. And look, they did well against the USA, but I think the USA were just bloody exhausted by then. I think the Dutch took advantage of that a bit, but they were just really, really poor in this one. They created absolutely nothing until they did the massive change of shape and went away with their normal tactics. I guess they held out Argentina to an extent, but even then, just their attacking play completely just gone. You know, I think Tom might talk about this a bit later, but their fullbacks, compared to how they've been the first few games, their fullbacks really offered
Nothing
going forward. And then obviously, and then once you get to extra time again, you know, they did really well to get back in the game, like credit to them. Like, but then into extra time again, it kind of just reverted to type. And then by the end, the Dutch was sitting back creating very little. And then, you know, Argentina were having shots. Sure, Argentina could have been a little bit better in those shots in the end. But I think overall, as much as Argentina weren't great and they really cocked it up by bloody coughing up a 2-goal lead in 10 minutes, I think it was probably a fair result overall, Argentina getting through, even though it was a bit bloody chaotic and nervy, to say the least, at the end.
We'll get into the talk of, obviously, Messi is the big ticket item here. But just before we get into that, touch on the fullbacks there. Of course, Argentina switched to the five at the back, which seemed to really fare them well. Of course, Molina getting one of the goals, and then Acuña getting brought down for the penalty, Tom.
Yeah, and that was really interesting to see, because I went into this game actually thinking that Netherlands have a chance. They haven't been, like Pat said, they're not like the greatest team to watch like throughout this tournament. But I was at the Netherlands v USA game like last week or whatever, and like Netherlands have technically superior players to USA. I don't think that's like an argument, even though USA have sort of decent midfielders and whatever, and they try and play like actually decent football. But even in that game, Netherlands sort of sat back, absorbed pressure and tried to score in transition, and it worked really well. Like, Dumfries that game had two really good assists and had a really good goal. All three of their goals came from crosses, and it looked like Netherlands had a pretty good setup to be able to just absorb pressure and transition. So it's sort of similar to what France did at the last World Cup, but with worse players, I guess. So then heading into this game, I found it a bit bizarre that they went probably with a more attacking lineup than we'd been used to seeing from Netherlands. So, like, previously, Davy Klaassen had been playing as the number 10, and they'd been playing Hakpo up top with Depay. But today they started Bergwijn instead of Klaassen, and I thought that was a bit weird. Personally, I would have really liked to see Berghaus start. I thought, even though he missed the pen, he was pretty good off the bench, had a hand in their first goal. I think he gave the assist for their first goal. So it was strange, really, really strange from Netherlands that took place. And I think with Argentina moving to five at the back, it sort of just, like, for the majority of the game, at least up until Netherlands sort of came back, Argentina were just on top, because whenever Netherlands had the ball, they were sort of just, like, passing the ball around, getting the ball out wide and crossing it. But because Argentina had the extra player in the box, they were just pretty much heading everything away. And it was, I thought, a really smart setup by Scaloni, irrespective of the fact that Netherlands ended up sort of coming back and taking it to pens.
I think also it sort of makes up, because obviously a big issue for Argentina is their lack of aerial ability. And that has come to cost them a little bit in this game. Obviously, they go through in the end. But even Romero, a player of his height, is, having watched him a lot for Spurs, is quite poor in the end. Then obviously Martinez. So at least playing that three at the back has the opportunity to sort of have a bit more weight in numbers. But Pat, we've got to talk about him. Leo Messi. He's an unbelievable piece of play to set up the first goal. Of course, scored the penalty as well. How is this his to lose? Is this going to be his tournament where he stands up and proves, I don't even think he needs it to prove he's the greatest, but gets that crowning achievement to make himself a god?
Well, I certainly hope so, but I'm a little bit biased given I have a bit of a financial investment in Argentina to go on and win the tournament. But I think even...
Do you own some land there?
Yeah, I may have... thought they were a bit of an outside chance, well, not an outside chance, but I thought that they were good, paying good odds to win the whole thing, and I'm a little bit nervy about that, but they're still in it, so I'm going to still back them to the hilt as long as they're in the competition. But he doesn't, I think you're right, he doesn't need to prove anything, but I do think that unless you're Brazilian or maybe Dutch, you're probably going to be hoping that Messi goes all the way and does it now, because I think it would just be the crowning achievement. He's won everything. He's done everything. And he has done so much for Argentina, even though, obviously, look, they did get their Copa America win last year. But even throughout all of their failures in, you know, the big games in the past for Argentina, he's been there. He's carried them so far, especially, like, you know, 2014, they had a much worse team than they did now. But he pretty much carried them kicking and screaming all the way to that final, which they only lost in extra time. So I think everyone is just hoped. Like, it would be just such an amazing story if he could finally do it. I think it would be completely deserved. And look, just that pass is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I think I know on a kind of Australian Twitter, obviously we get Foz and Bozo on SBS analyzing the game at halftime, and Craig Foss, he did a really interesting analysis, like really broke down the play for that goal. You know, how some Dutch defender, you know, he missed one step and it allowed Messi to come inside, and you know, the different movement of was it Molina or the other fullback? I've had a complete
Molina, mind Molina,
right now. Molina, yeah. So, you know, Molina he run a certain channel instead of going out wide that allowed the goal to happen. And then it comes to just analysing the pass, and he says, well, you know what? You can't analyse that. That's just Messi being Messi. I don't know how he's seen that, but he's done it. And I think that just kind of sums it up, you know, mere mortal players in quotation marks, you know, they wouldn't be able to do that. But Messi's just that phenomenal that he can pull it off. And, you know, throughout the game, it was kind of like the Australia game where, you know, in the first half against Australia, he didn't, you know, we shut him down fairly well. And he gets that one moment where he somehow finds the one spot between three defenders to put the ball into the goal. And this game here, you know, he was relatively quiet for the first 40 minutes or whatever of this one. And then he just, you know, gets free, just an amazingly weighted pass. And, you know, I think some people are getting on Twitter getting a bit, you know, critical of Van Dijk, which I know, I guess that's just kind of European football Twitter or something. But what can you do when a pass like that, you can't expect a player to do a pass like that. It's just the perfect pass, you know, just a good run to be fair, but just it's phenomenal. And I think we should be enjoying as much of Lionel Messi whilst we can. I think we should be kind of hoping that he can go all the way, at least get to the final, so we can just watch him for as much as we can, because it's his last World Cup. So we're going to miss him a lot. We're going to miss him a lot on the world stage.
And for me, the craziest part about that goal is the fact that there's like four or five different things that happen in the lead up to the pass being played. And it's like all of those things have to work out like completely perfectly for that pass to even like be possible. But because it's messy, it just like all of them actually work out. Like like that touch, he's sort of facing like the sideline and then he like, so I think he touches it with his right foot and then comes back inside. And then you've got Ake who follows him out. So Ake is out of position. And then I think in my opinion, the craziest part about the pass is like the fact that before, like half a second before he does the pass, he does this sort of like shimmy to like unbalance the guy that's defending him. But it also gives that like extra half second for Molina to be like right on the shoulder of the defender. And so he does this shimmy, takes the immediate defender out of the equation. And then he's facing the complete other direction. It's like a Busquets-esque disguised pass. And like no one even saw that run in real time. I was looking the complete other direction. Cause how often do we see Messi, like when he's like facing that way, you know how he like sort of shapes to shoot and then the whole defense like collapses on him. And then he ends up just like passing and you're like, oh my God. But then he's passed it the other way this time. And I'm like, oh my God, that is just, it was the most, like my reaction in real time. I was just like, me and my dad were watching it. We're just like sitting each other, like what on earth was that? It was like, it's just crazy watching this guy. It's just, it's next level, man. It is next level.
Like Pat says, we need to enjoy, because at the end of the day, no matter what happens now, he's got two more games at a World Cup and he's got 6 months left on his PSG contract. God knows where he's going to go at the end of that.
Melbourne victory.
Well, apparently Danny Townsend's going to make a big play that is definitely going to be successful. but like we said as well, chaotic game. The referee handing out cards like a stingy grandma at Christmas and just absolute chaos. Do you think, Pat, do you think there is a point? There are a few guys. I think Acuna is now going to miss the semi-final, who has, I think, been very good this entire tournament for Argentina. Do you think there is a point where maybe the shithousery and the dark arts of Argentina get a little bit too much, or is that just them?
Honestly, from my personal point of view, I know it's not a popular one, but no, I love it. As someone who on the Sunday league pictures of Penrith and the Blue Mountains commonly tries his best to imitate the shithousery and dark arts. No, I can't get enough of it. I mean, they obviously weren't too bad against us, but there were bits at the end where they were employing it. And I honestly wasn't too upset about it, mainly because I kind of understand that if we were in their shoes, we'd probably be doing the exact same thing. But it was just brilliant. I just found it absolutely hilarious. And I know I sent a photo to the group chat just before we came on, but there's an amazing photo captured of after Martinez scores the winning penalty. It's obviously, you know, the Dutch players, obviously, you know, they're quite upset. A couple of, got head in their hands, a couple of, like, you know, fall to the ground. And then there's just the whole Argentinian team running. And of the 10 that are there, I think about four or five of them are like goading or gloating towards the Dutch players. It's just absolutely phenomenal. But look, I think in terms of, was it too much?
First time I've ever seen a yellow card given during a penalty shootout.
I know, and I think someone also picked this up. I'm pretty sure Bergwijn got a yellow card after being subbed off, so I think that might be another first as well. But look, I don't think the shithouser is too much. I just think the referee kind of lost control a bit. I think it was just more down to him not being able to I don't know what he was doing. Like I said, he just
kind of... Lahoff loves making the game about him. He loves
I think he really did that.
I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, it's the way he kind of carried himself. He's just like, mate, come on, it's not about you. And even just the way, it's like the two whistles. It's not just one whistle. It's always going to be two whistles, a few seconds, two whistles. It was just... I was getting bloody sick of it by halftime. So when the game going the distance really did push it home. But I mean, look, like I said, I'm a little bit biased. I don't mind it, but I know that it does rile some people up the wrong way, especially, look, I think the kicking thing, yeah, you probably shouldn't kick it into the ball shouldn't be kicked into the subs bench like that. It's absolutely hilarious. I just love how then, you know, you get
also Van Dijk like bowling him over.
Yeah, just bowling over Paredes and the whole Dutch bench is one running up. That was hilarious. But I understand, it's like, you probably shouldn't do that. But because I love chaos, I'm kind of all for it. But yeah, I get how it can be a bit divisive, especially if your team's on the receiving end in a World Cup quarterfinal.
Just one more thing as well. This actually on the Brazil game. I work with an Argentinian, and he was saying, we were talking about yesterday that Brazil think they've already won it, and he was saying that in Brazil, the big topic is that all the media were talking about is, all right, where are we going to put our sixth star? There's not enough room on the badge. Apparently, they were getting that carried away. And he was like, he came across about 6 or 7 years ago, and he's going, I reckon they might lose tomorrow, Lucas. I think they might lose. And it came out to be true.
Mind you, Argentina were very close to following them.
Very, very close. But they just go through. And we have two more quarterfinals, of course, tomorrow morning. The 2 a.m. game. We'll start with this one. And we were talking all about the GOAT Messi. Well, the other GOAT isn't having as much of a fun time at the moment. Morocco face Portugal. And Tom, do you think there's any chance Ronaldo starts?
If he starts, like that, then I'm sorry, that's just like the worst decision ever. Portugal haven't even, they're another team that, like, for the majority of this tournament, haven't really been that good, but then they come out against Switzerland and just absolutely annihilate them from pillar to post, and they just look so much better without Ronaldo. Gonçalo Ramos quite literally scored a hat trick, like, in his place. So there's, like, unless you drop the guy that scored a hat trick, there's basically no way of getting Ronaldo in this team without changing system. And then, like, the system's working fine, so why on earth would you put him back into the team? And this is the thing which irks me about Ronaldo, by the way. Like, he's one of the best players of all time. He's gone and, like, he's 37. He's got so much great experience that he could be, like, comparting onto all these younger players like Liao and Felix and Bernardo Silva, these types of guys. And I'm sure they'd all listen to him. But, like, he's just not, because he's becoming this sort of, like, toxic member of the dressing room. I feel like he could easily be on the bench and sort of being, like, in the most respectful way possible, like a good cheerleader for the team, like, as they go and do their thing. But the problem is that he's got such a big ego that he's not willing to actually accept that that's basically all he's good for these days.
And on the other side of it, of course, Morocco, I think, touch about Argentina maybe being everyone's second favourite team if your team's out. Well, Morocco are probably equally that, Pat. So do you think they've got what it takes to be the first ever African World Cup semi-finalist?
It would be phenomenal if they could do that. I think they're already the first ever North African side to make the quarterfinal, so it's an achievement in itself. And they've been really, really good. I don't think people realise, just because they're not the most... Not even that they're not excited, but just because they're, you know, a lot of their games have been close and they took Spain to penalties, but they've actually been one of the best performing teams. Like, they haven't really had a bad game or even like a nervy game at the World Cup yet. Obviously, they beat a shit Belgium side. And again, but the thing is, they, you know, Croatia in the semi-finals now, and Croatia really struggled to break them down. Croatia looked really, really poor in the nil-all draw in their opening match of the tournament. And then, look, obviously, I mean, their win against Spain, as much as an amazing defensive performance and in the shootout, but I also think it was kind of Spain shooting themselves in the foot a little bit. But I think that they really can, because, you know, Portugal, look, they beat Switzerland bloody 6-1, but I think Switzerland capitulated, and that's probably a very kind way to put it. And, you know, again, Portugal have had, you know, a few shaky games of their own. I think Morocco's defence is that good. You know, I think they've, even before the tournament, they barely conceded a goal even before the tournament. And I think the one goal they've conceded so far was a really just jammy, unlucky own goal. So I back their defence to hold on. They've obviously got real chemistry together. Their team's been around. You know, a lot of them played at the last World Cup where they weren't quite as good, but they've got that chemistry. They've been together for a while and they've obviously got momentum. You know, their keeper Bounou is playing amazingly. You know, their defence is solid. Hakim Ziyech has come up with some big moments attacking in games. And look, it's going to be hard against Portugal. And Portugal, if they start Ramos, if they keep that same shape, they're going to be probably a bit of a tougher prospect than Spain were going forward. But I think that I back their defence to do a really good job and make it really hard for Portugal. And, you know, we've seen this whole World Cup, you know, once it gets to extra time, who bloody knows what can happen? Because, you know, fatigue sets in. It's, you know, all about momentum. You know, it's all about moments, the game swing from one big chance to the next. So once it gets there, who knows what can happen? You know, I wouldn't. They're probably not favourites just because, you know, Portugal played really well. They've got so much attacking talent, even outside, you know, even, you know, they could even bring on bloody Ronaldo if they are losing. And Ronaldo, probably the one thing that he can do now at his age and in his circumstance, one thing he can do is, you know, nick a goal where other players can't. So I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, you know, Morocco are shoes in or something or favourites, but they're not. I don't think they'll get smashed. I think it'll be a really close and tight game. I think it's a shame that it's at 2 a.m. and that I won't really be able to get up and watch it, because I would love to watch this game. I think it's going to be really intriguing.
Well, that's just a lack of commitment from you, Pat. But the 6 a.m. game is England-France. Probably the biggest quarterfinal that we've got. I'm not sure about you, Tom, but the part of me that doesn't... I think a lot of Italians are in the same boat where you don't really want to see England do too well. I'm getting a little bit worried. What do you think? Whoever wins this is probably going to be the favourite for the rest of the tournament. Tom, who are you taking on this one?
It's pretty tough. I personally think France will win, but I think it'll be closer than people think. I think a lot of the criticism about England has been like, oh, well, like, look at the teams that they've played. They've, like, beaten all these crap teams. This is the first good team they've played. But pretty much all of the favourites have lost to a team that you'd, like, sort of expect them to beat. You look at, like, Portugal lost to South Korea, Brazil lost to Cameroon and lost to Croatia today, Spain lost
to Morocco. Sorry, just to interject, now that Netherlands lost this morning, England are the only team left in this tournament that haven't lost a game.
Yeah, so that sort of just goes to show, doesn't it? Because, and I think that's interesting because, like, I don't think it's actually the fairest critique of England. I think they've done a really good job so far to, like, steamroll pretty much all the teams that they've played. I think the USA game, they were really poor. That was, like, the worst game that I've watched at this World Cup by far. But I think aside from that, like, they were really good against Senegal after the first 40 minutes. They sat back and they scored a couple really good goals in transition. Bellingham was unbelievable. Like, the two first goals, England's first two goals, he had a really big part in both of them. Especially the second one, when he wins the ball in midfield, plays the ball out wide to Foden. It was incredible, incredible play to go and win that and have the composure to go and play that ball in behind. But yeah, it'll be a very, very interesting game. I think Mbappe will obviously be the main threat, but I think tactically there's something about England and the way that they set up, whether they sort of are the ones that allow France to come at them, because I think Mbappe thrives when he's got space to attack. And if you give Mbappe space in transition, like, to be honest, it's pretty much impossible to defend him because he's that good. And we've seen it in pretty much every game. And I don't think any team has really played a proper low block against France yet. Even Poland, they sort of were more of a mid block and Mbappe just completely destroyed them. So I'd be interested to see if England sort of sat off and try to absorb, whether that would do anything to stop him. I think it's pretty hard anyway, to be honest. But yeah, it'll be a very interesting game. A lot of French people came into this tournament thinking that they would be not that great, especially with Pogba and Kanté missing out. But I think they've really put that assumption to bed, and they've been a very, very entertaining team to watch. I personally hope they win, and I think they will just get the job done as well.
No Pogba, no Kanté, no Benzema, no worries so far. Pat, do you see England posing them any worries?
I think it'll be a very close game. I think both teams are similar in that they're quality-wise, they're up there with the best in the tournament, but they're both flawed in a way. I think I still have some worries about England's defence, even though, look, they've recovered from the Iran game. I think the Iran game was a bit worrying. We thought, oh, what are they going to do against better teams, in quotation marks? And look, they've tightened up, in fairness to them, but I think there's still question marks now. And they're going to, you know, this is by far the best attack they are versing in this France game. But one thing I worry about England, you know, Tom talks about that. A lot of people have talked about, you know, they're versing not as good teams and how it's a bit overstated. I do agree that it's not that simple, that, you know, any team in the World Cup can give it any big team a run for their money. But what I do worry about England is that a lot of their games, it has taken them quite a while to get going. You know, obviously the USA game, they didn't really get going at all. You know, against Wales, it took the whole first half. And against Senegal, it really took till about 35 minutes where Bellingham went on that amazing run to get it going. And I worry about how against a top team like France, do they have the luxury of, you know, taking that time to get going in attack? Like, what if France go bang, bang, score a goal, score two goals after, you know, 15, 20 minutes, then what do England do there? So that's kind of my big concern about them, is that they've shown it's taken them a lot of time to get started, especially in attack. You know, they kind of, I don't know if it's a way that they set up, maybe Southgate wants them to take their time a little more, maybe first half, gather possession a little bit, try to find the holes and find out where the weaknesses are and then exploit them a bit more in the second half. But I think that's, I've really noticed that watching England's games, is that it's noticeable how slow it is. And I worry that a team like France, they've got the quality and attack to punish. I mean, we all talk about Mbappe, but even, you know, they've got Olivier Giroud, who's now the record French goal scorer. Griezmann's having an amazing tournament. Dembele's looked really good. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how, well, to be fair, both sides, it's their first big challenge for both sides. And look, I think France's defence is still a little bit suspect. It's not as rock solid as it was maybe in 2018. And that midfield, as much as they performed really well, and even especially Rabiot, I thought he'd be crap. And part Rabiot being there was part of the reason I tipped them to go out in the group stage. So that's it. Once again, I am very smart at football things. But their midfield's done well. But still, I think England actually have a better midfield than France do, to be honest, especially the fact that Griezmann doesn't really play as a midfielder. I know he's technically in the formation, he's in that 10 role, but he doesn't really do the defensive work. So it puts a lot of pressure on, I think it's Tchouaméni or Camavinga, whichever one's playing. I've had a mind blank.
Tchouaméni
and Rabiot, they play. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. So, you know, you're going to have Bellingham, you know, Henderson, you know, all the England's have depth in quality in the midfield. So I think it could be interesting. That might be one area where England might back themselves to overrun France a little bit and control the midfield a bit more. And that could go a long way to deciding the game. But look, I think it's going to be very close as well. I think it might, I'm doing a bit of a tipping tournament with my family, and I've actually tipped this one to go to penalties, but I think we're going to see the return of the old England in penalty shootouts. And we're going to see France go through on penalties, or either on penalties or at least an extra time. I think it's going to be really close.
So you guys are both going France, Portugal as the semi-final?
Yeah.
I'm tempted to go France, Morocco. I reckon Morocco might have a tiny, like, I don't know. I want to see one. Oh, I guess Croatia's an underdog.
Croatia was the upset.
Yeah. I'd like to see another one, though. I'd like to see another one. That'd be good.
I would too. Just hard. You kind of say that, but then I just said also that Morocco haven't really had a bad game yet. It's just,
yeah. It's so hard. This World Cup throws up like random things at like literally every corner. Like,
I'm going so England, much. Portugal, by the way. I think England. I actually think it might come home.
It won't. It just won't. Hope... There is something in the English DNA is not pop. They are allergic to winning major tournaments. It will not happen. We can clip this up on Twitter. I don't care, but England will not win the World Cup. There.
Well, okay. Well, not clip happening. That up. Clip that up and let's make Pat look like an absolute dick.
Well, I've already made myself look like an absolute dick with every single team that I said would be a dark horse went out in the group stage. So I don't really care. I've lost all of my credibility as it is, so there's not much more to fall.
Well, I said Denmark are going to make the final, so I'm glad I'm wrong on that one. But sorry, Tom, who was your pre-tournament winner? Who did you predict? Brazil?
Oh, I think I probably would have said Brazil. I don't think I actually like said one, but I reckon I probably would have said Brazil, yeah.
If you two were to, I know Pat's already got a small mortgage down on Argentina to win. Say that didn't exist. If you two were to say who you think's going to win the 2022 World Cup right at this moment, who would you
France.
Go?
France.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, I say France. Like I said, because England have a pathological inability to win major tournaments, it kind of has to be France.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if Morocco or Croatia can cause an upset, or if Messi can launch his way to his first ever World Cup. Just before we finish up, just on that, there was a great shot right, I think it was 120th minute after Enzo Fernandez hit the post for Argentina, where they just panned off to a little sign of Maradona, sort of as if he was on a church praying, like he was a mosaic or something. And it does seem a little bit written in the stars, yeah. I hope. But anyway, we will see that in the semi-finals, and of course we'll have the quarterfinals tomorrow. But until then, Pat, Tom, thanks for coming on again.
No, thank you. Lucas.
All good. And we'll be back again, of course, tomorrow to review our quarterfinals. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and enjoy the night's football.